Governor Romney, thank you for meeting with me today. I want to go over a couple of things that you've talked about today, and then I want to talk to you a little bit more about foreign policy, because I don't think that there's been a lot mentioned about your foreign policy. First off, you're talking about immigration, and how do you see immigration, the immigration debate, as part of the greater foreign policy debate?
Well, there are immigration implications for foreign policy, but I think immigration, the heart of immigration, relates to national security and homeland security, the safety of our border, as well as the number of illegal immigrants coming into the country and expecting benefits and support in this country. I believe that we can look at our immigration laws and say that it's time for us to have in place a system of enforcing the law so that we can protect legal immigration. Legal immigration is a good thing. It enhances our competitiveness as a nation. Illegal immigration is something we can end, and I believe we should take action finally to do just that.
Now, last year you were supportive, at least conceptually, of the Senate bill that was going through at the time. It didn't make it through. This year maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, I didn't support last year's bill. I said that there were a number of provisions that were put forward that were reasonable. I think they were reasonable. I said that I wasn't endorsing any of them. I didn't endorse any of them. But I said I wanted to give them a good, hard look. And there were provisions which struck me as being like amnesty. Amnesty is an interesting word. It means different things to different people, so I'm not going to get hung up on the legal definition. But my view is that with regards to the people that are here illegally, they should not be given a special pathway to become citizens or permanent residents. They should get in line with everybody else. And when that principle is violated, I have generally opposed the legislation which does that.
And thank you very much for clarifying that. I appreciate that. Now, your main problem in this bill, is, as you've explained in the interviews today, has been the Z visa provision, which is something that kicks in. It's supposed to kick in after the triggers, but there's a temporary status that kicks in immediately upon passage of the bill. And you were talking about how we can amend the Z visas possibly to reflect what you feel are the priorities of trimming illegal immigration. You were saying something about making the Z visas temporary. Can you explain more about how you would see a temporary Z visa program and what would be the cutoff at that point?
Well, I'm not proposing legislation.
Okay.
I'm not drafting a piece of legislation. There are a number of pieces of legislation that are floating around Washington. My principle is pretty straightforward, which is don't give to people who are here illegally the right to stay here indefinitely in a way that puts them ahead of the line of the people who are applying for that right. And one way to do that, of course, would be to say to all people who are here illegally, sign up for come into the post office, sign up, or the State Department, or wherever you might be, sign up so we know who you are and get you on a pathway a realistic attrition program so that you can return home. Ultimately, if you want to apply for citizenship or apply for permanent residence, that you'd be able to do so. I don't think people should be barred from applying for citizenship or permanent residency if they've been here illegally, but I don't think they should have any advantage in being given that status by virtue of having come here illegally.
Let's move on to foreign policy, because I think it's something that people don't... I think you've been answering a lot of questions about domestic policy, and I'd like to hear more about how you see America's place in the world. And one of the things that you said earlier today was that we need to build stronger relationships with allies and with other nations. How do you see a Romney presidency working towards those goals?
Well, actually, I had the chance to speak at the George Herbert Walker Bush Library with an audience there on some changes I'd like to see brought to bear in our foreign policy. And likewise, I spoke in Miami with regards to policy changes in Latin America. Some of those changes are these. First, I believe we need a stronger military. I think we have understaffed our military by at least 100,000 troops, and we're underspending. Secondly, I believe that we need to organize our non-military resources on a geographical basis with a single person in charge of bringing those resources to bear to help further the interests of stability and modernity. What that means is that you'd have someone responsible, for instance, for, let's say, Africa, who'd be looking at the policies that we can employ with health care, financial resources, education resources, and the like, along with other nations, to help move nations towards modernity and towards stability. I think ultimately, with regards to the great foreign policy that we face today, that threat is radical, violent Islam. And we need a strong military to protect ourselves against that threat, but we're also going to need to carry out a worldwide effort with ourselves and like-minded civilized nations to help moderate Muslims and to help them reject the extreme. And that's not an effort that can be carried out unilaterally by us, nor is it an effort that can be done exclusively on a military basis. It's going to require a collaboration of civilized nations and moderate Islamic states. And that's an effort which I look forward to help lead to make sure that Muslims are able to reject the extreme.
How do you see the UN and our place in the UN? Do you see the UN as an organization that is structured to assist you in that sort of effort, or do you think that you need to work outside the UN structure in order to make that successful?
Well, for the past number of years, the UN has been a great disappointment. The failures of the UN are legion. The decision, for instance, of the UN Human Rights Council to sanction Israel time and again, but then to see no problems in Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan. These are failures that are stark and disappointing. At the same time, I value the fact that the UN has an agency like the IAEA, which carries out inspections and processes for determining whether nations are following the NPT. Does it have a role to play? Yes. Can we rely on the UN to bring stability to the world? No. And we're going to have to strengthen our own alliances and at the same time also build, in my view, a new alliance. And this is an alliance or a coalition of civilized nations to help move Islam towards modernity.
It's been proposed that we try to quarterback the creation of a League of Democracies or a League of Western Nations that apparently would be built on a NATO model or something similar to that. Would you think that would be a good model to follow? Do you think that it would be something that you'd want to replace the UN with, or is it something that you could use in a parallel, if you would be interested in doing that, that you would use it in a parallel fashion to the UN?
Well, that's something I first proposed under a different name, which is a Partnership for Progress and Prosperity, which is a partnership of civilized nations as well as moderate Islamic states that would come together to help establish good public schools in Islamic states that are threatened by violent jihad, good public schools that are not Wahhabi schools, the rule of law in those nations, agricultural and economic policies that are modern and that allow these nations to compete on a global basis. Different candidates have picked up on the idea and given it different names, but we're going to need to bring together like-minded nations that want to support a movement towards modernity, and that's something which I think is a high priority for this nation.
We obviously have had some differences with Europe during the last few years, especially during the war on terror. It's a split in Western civilization that's very troubling, especially in regards to the war on terror, because it looks like we're divided and fighting amongst ourselves. How would you propose mending the relationship with Western European nations and building that strong alliance? What policy and what diplomatic efforts would we need to make in order to bring Europe closer back to us?
Well, surely the President of the United States and the leaders of other European nations have a great deal we can learn from one another and a great opportunity to come together because of the coincidence of our interests. We very badly, as a group of Western nations, want to see the defeat of global violent jihad. We want to see the strengthening of moderate Islamic people. We're also insistent upon the preservation of the principles of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. And we want to see Russia emerge as a responsible player in the world economy and on the world stage. So there's much that we have in common, and we have worked together. For instance, the E3 has led the negotiations with Iran relating to the nuclear proliferation, which that nation is pursuing. And so there's much we can do together, and I believe that it's important for us to recognize that Europe is an important partner, that the respect we have for European leaders and European nations is something which we can communicate through personal diplomacy, as well as through a shared discussion of the challenges we face and of the options we have for overcoming those challenges. we come from the same cultural heritage, if you will. We come from theirs. We spring from the Western culture, and that basis as well can enable us to form partnerships and relationships of trust on a personal basis that I think will enhance our capabilities in the world. America is strong by itself. America can protect itself. But at the same time, we are stronger when we stand with friends. And the friends that I'd like to stand with include our European friends as well as friends throughout the entire world.
Governor, we've seen a lot of turmoil in Latin America recently here in our own hemisphere. Hugo Chavez in Venezuela is shutting down television stations, nationalizing industries, and it seems like there is a move towards socialism in Latin America. What would be, how would you go about trying to open better relations with Latin America and try to draw those people back to free market democracies and free market economics?
Well, I think that we unfortunately took our eye off the ball of the progress in our own hemisphere. Following the end of the Cold War, there was what Charles Krauthammer called a holiday from history. We thought there was going to be no more evil in the world. At the same time, we then suffered the 9/11 tragedy, which, of course, took our focus to the Middle East. And we should recognize that it's important to have a strong set of friends in your neighborhood. And Hugo Chavez's progress and his affiliation with others is very troubling. And there are a number of things I think we need to do. One is to reach out diplomatically to leaders of the nations and in Latin America. Two is to assure that our financial support is going to those nations that are closest to us and supportive of our policies. Three is to market to the people of the hemisphere in which we live as to the principles of democracy and free enterprise, and to make sure that the reality of America's heart and goodness is something which they understand and appreciate. Four, I think we should extend our economic ties with nations in Latin America. The president has worked out free trade agreements, trade promotion authority agreements with a number of nations, with Panama, with Nicaragua, excuse me, with Panama, with Peru, and Colombia, and in those cases, among others, I believe we should be Congress should be giving the final sign off so that we're able to have better economic ties. Better economic ties, I think, creates better understanding between our nations. So these are some of the measures I think we have to put in place to strengthen those ties and to rebuild the relationships of trust and strength which have long characterized our affiliations in Latin America.
Duncan Hunter and I believe Tom Tancredo are talking about pulling back on free trade, going towards a fair trade doctrine. Duncan Hunter especially is very critical of the trade agreements with China, and I believe in some cases in Latin America. What is your position on free trade versus fair trade globally, as well as specifically with China and perhaps India?
Well, surely free trade is a source of additional economic vitality for our country. It's been calculated that the average American family earns an extra $6,000 a year by virtue of the free trade that we enjoy around the world. At the same time, no one can be opposed to fairness in our trade. And with regards to our relationship with China, the fact that they have pegged their currency at an artificially low level to the dollar presents a competitive disadvantage for us and an advantage for them. And that's something we'd like to see end. Interestingly, when the original GATT and now the WTO agreements were reached, the idea of pegging currencies was normal. That was the standard. Now we float currencies. So there's nothing in these provisions to basically sanction China for doing what they're doing. But it clearly puts us at a disadvantage, and it's something we're going to have to change. China's been making some progress on that. The yuan has been devalued by about, revalued by about 8% over the last several months. But there's more to be done there. And of greater interest in some respects is the protection of intellectual property. Much of what we sell to the world is in the form of patents and technology. And if nations steal that technology, it means that we're losing the commercial value that we worked hard to create. So there's a lot of work we're going to have to do to make sure that our trade is fair and is balanced. I don't like signing fair trade agreements that don't present an advantage to us. I hope it presents an advantage to the other guy, too, but it's got to be two-sided at least. And I'm not going to go out and sign agreements that put us at a disadvantage. But avoiding trade is a sure way for America to become non-competitive and ultimately not to be a major power. And that, of course, would be a very bad course to take and is not something that our nation will take.
Governor Romney, thank you.